Support for On Point with Tom Ashbrook and the following message comes from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage's completely online process lets you get a custom mortgage solution wherever and whenever you want. Check out Rocket Mortgage at quickenloans.com/onpoint.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Michelle Obama will soon be leaving the White House after 8 years as First Lady. She tackled healthy eating and the challenges of military families as First Lady, emerges as a strong family figure herself, elegant, at times outspoken. Replacing her is Melania Trump, the Slovenian-born former model who mostly stayed out of the election campaign spotlight. Her start as First Lady will not be from the White House, but from Trump Tower, New York, not Washington. Every First Lady finds her own way. This hour On Point being First Lady, what it's been, what it may become. You can join us on air or online where this conversation is always on. Did you think it might be the first dude this time? What do you think of Melania Trump saying she won't live in the White House? What do you want from the president's closest partner? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Joining me first today from New York is David Sims, senior editor at The Atlantic, where he covers media and culture. He's been thinking about First Lady Jackie Kennedy in the new film Jackie, just coming out, depicting some of her life in the White House, some tough time in the White House. Natalie Portman stars. David Sims, welcome to On Point.
Hi, Tom. How are you doing?
Great. This is not exactly a feel-good movie, Jackie. It's about the really tough days right at the time of John F. Kennedy's assassination.
That's right. I mean, it's set almost in real time about a week. Well, real time is stretching it, but, you know, it's set in a very compressed period right after JFK's assassination. And it's a movie about the public face the First Lady has to portray, you know, at all times, but especially, you know, in times of extreme public need and the sort of the narrative that is required to sort of be crafted, you know, therein, like the difference between the private face and the public face they put on.
And how she fought to shape the legacy of her husband, President John F. Kennedy. Here's a scene right from early on in Jackie, starring Natalie Portman. She and Bobby Kennedy are riding to the hospital. JFK's body is between them in a casket. She's dressed in that famous blood-spattered pink suit, telling Bobby what she just experienced.
There was blood everywhere. There are so many pieces.
Jackie.
I've tried to hold this head together.
Hey, slow down.
Natalie Portman carrying that role. And then, as you write, David Sims, she has to really fight to get the kind of funeral observation, the kind of public ceremony that she wants for her husband. Studies old photographs of what happened with Abraham Lincoln after his assassination, the newly widowed Jackie Kennedy preparing this dramatic procession that everyone at the time saw through Washington. Here's a scene where Natalie Portman, as Jackie, is telling the Jack Valenti character, then a special assistant to the newly elected Lyndon Baines Johnson, that the procession will be held despite his security concerns for foreign dignitaries.
Inform them that I will walk with Jack tomorrow, alone if necessary. And tell General de Gaulle that if he wishes to ride in an armored car or in a tank, for that matter, I won't blame him. And I'm sure the tens of millions of people watching won't either.
Why are you doing this, Mrs. Kennedy?
Oh, I'm just doing my job.
Max Casella playing Jack Valenti there, and Peter Sarsgaard, who played Bobby Kennedy earlier. David Sims has written about the film Just Out. You talk about this being a film about the difference between public and private grief, rendered on the biggest scale possible, but also kind of guilt in here. David, speak to us.
Well, exactly. I mean, you're watching Jackie Kennedy move through this very, you know, calculated plan of setting out her husband's legacy, making sure that he is not forgotten or sort of dismissed as a footnote in history. And then at the same time, you're also seeing her in private. You're seeing her try to deal with the trauma of the assassination itself, and of course, with talking with her children, things like that. And I mean, the film walks such a knife edge. It doesn't want to shy away from the sort of very gauzy, very opulent image of the Kennedys that Jackie Kennedy really helped to preserve and to sell. But it also, you know, it doesn't want to keep the audience at arm's length. It's a tricky balance between the sort of visual grandeur and the you know emotional interiority, and it does a very good job, in my opinion.
You write about Natalie Portman as Jackie struggling to reconcile the story she's built with the very flawed man that she undoubtedly loved. What about Natalie Portman's portrayal of Jackie Kennedy?
I mean, she just sells the power that that Jackie Kennedy obviously had, even at the time. And the film is so much about, as you hear in that scene where she's talking to Jack Valenti, about the difficulty a lot of people had dealing with such a powerful woman, as, you know, even at the time, which feels relevant to today. But then, you know, in her quieter moments, she essentially feels like a real person and like the iconic, you know, sort of televised figure that we all know and we all remember in some way or other, even if it's, you know, it almost as a historical figure now. And that is, you know, that is hard. It doesn't feel like an impression exactly. It feels more three-dimensional.
What did it end up leaving you thinking about the role of First Lady? In a tragic way, she was empowered by JFK's death. Her loss was so great that no one wanted to deny her. And yet, what an odd, unusual role. The power is reflected, in this case, even from a man who's now dead.
Right, that's true. I mean, that's sort of the guilt that I'm getting at, is that her place in the room is suddenly, you know, unimpeachable, and yet, of course, she's deriving it from this terrible, terrible moment. But the other thing that is interesting about the film is that it cuts back in time to the famous live televised tour of the White House that she gave when they were first in office and she'd refurbished the White House. And you're seeing the sort of beginning, especially in the television age, of how the First Lady can present herself and be a sort of public figure beyond just the consort of the president, you know, operate as someone with their own agency and their own sort of vision of how to present America on the grandest scale. And, you know, it's very much a film about that, about crafting your own narrative in that role, and the power that, you know, television and the global sort of age afforded.
First Lady crafting her own narrative in a role at a very difficult time. David Sims writes about it for The Atlantic. His headline on the new movie, Jackie, the movie, enters a First Lady's worst nightmare. David Sims at The Atlantic, thanks very much for being with us.
Thanks, Tom.
One more scene from the new film, Jackie. It's just coming out in theaters. This is from a few days after the assassination. She sits down. This sort of frames the whole movie with Life magazine writer Teddy White, Theodore H. White. Here's White, played by Billy Crudup, talking about how Jackie, the First Lady in the terrible circumstance, would be remembered.
You left your mark on this country, Mrs. Kennedy, these past few days. That's the story. Losing a president is like, it's like losing a father, and you were a mother to all of us, and that's a very good story. The entire country watched the funeral from beginning to end. Decades from now, people will remember your dignity and the majesty. They'll remember you.
Billy Crudup in the new film, Jackie. Catherine Jellison joins us right now from Athens, Ohio. She's professor of history at Ohio State University and focuses on the role of the First Lady. Catherine Jellison, welcome to On Point. Thanks very much for being with us.
Thanks, Tom. And I need to correct you. I'm
Please.
At Ohio University,
oh,
not Ohio
that's
State.
That's right in front of me here, and it just came. It's all plain as day right in front of me. Yes, Ohio University, and we're delighted to have you.
Thank you for inviting me.
For many years, Jackie Kennedy was seen as kind of an archetypal First Lady. Is there an archetype today as we prepare for another transition from Michelle Obama to Melania Trump?
Well, I think Jackie Kennedy certainly made her mark on the role of First Lady, and perhaps for the current generation is the First Lady to whom all others are compared, for the reasons that your previous guest noted, her conduct in the face of tragedy at the time of her husband's death is indelibly marked on our consciousness as Americans. You know, two generations later, people know those images and still admire her for the grace and the poise and the role she played in helping the nation get through that tragedy. And so I think certainly when our current First Lady, Michelle Obama, moved to the White House, journalists were asking me questions about which previous First Lady would she be most like. And again and again, the question came up, will she be another Jackie Kennedy? The idea that she was bringing young children to the White House, that she was someone who was young by First Lady standards, and the fact that she already in the campaign was showing her flair for fashion. So I think in many ways, Jackie Kennedy has put her stamp on the role of First Lady now, two generations after she was in the White House.
Apart from a moment of national tragedy, as in JFK's assassination, is this an important role, Professor Jellison?
Well, it has become an important role, as I oftentimes tell journalists who ask me about this role. It's not in the Constitution. You know, it isn't something that the founders set forth as being a formal role in American politics and American society. But it has developed over time, obviously, to be an important public role, a role that the women who have held that position have certain obligations according to the wants and needs of the American public. There has been the desire on the part of Americans to want a role model in that position, a woman who displays certain characteristics and strengths that will be modeled by others in the society.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the role of the First Lady as Michelle Obama heads out, Melania Trump waits in the wings, and the new film Jackie hits the theaters. You can join us this hour. What should a First Lady be now? Did Michelle Obama get it right? In a time when we almost had a first dude, does the old First Lady role still make sense? And what do you make of Melania Trump maybe not even living in the White House for a while, of Ivanka Trump stepping up to a first daughter slash maybe first lady-like role? Of course, First Lady has been around for a lot longer than even Jackie Kennedy, of course. Here's a little tape from 1941. This was delivered hours after the attack on Pearl Harbor, 75th anniversary of that, tomorrow. Then First Lady Eleanor Roosevelt delivered a speech that she wrote herself, addressing the concerns of the listening public while her husband, President Franklin Delano Roosevelt, addressed the U.S. Congress.
We must go about our daily business more determined than ever to do the ordinary things as well as we can. And when we find a way to do anything more in our communities to help others, to build morale, to give a feeling of security, we must do it. Whatever is asked of us, I am sure we can accomplish it. We are the free and unconquerable people of the United States of America.
Very strong message there from Eleanor Roosevelt as the country faced Pearl Harbor and its entry into what would be an enormous war. Flash forward, 1962. David Sims mentioned this earlier, but First Lady Jackie Kennedy, this was this iconic, well-known CBS News interview in February of that year, well before the assassination. That wasn't on the screen. And Jackie Kennedy led a national audience on a tour of the White House. The restoration and redecoration of the White House was her first major public project during her time as First Lady.
This house will always grow and should. It just seemed to me such a shame when we came here to find hardly anything of the past in the house.
First Ladies have taken up different interests. Nancy Reagan pushed against drugs. Here was a televised national address. August 1986, Nancy Reagan and her husband, President Ronald Reagan, outlined their national drug and alcohol abuse resistance plan. Just Say No. Mrs. Reagan used the phrase, first used it in a speech in Oakland, California.
So to my young friends out there, life can be great, but not when you can't see it. So open your eyes to life, to see it in the vivid colors that God gave us as a precious gift to his children, to enjoy life to the fullest and to make it count. Say yes to your life, and when it comes to drugs and alcohol, just say no.
First ladies, all in a row. No first dude yet. And then in July, the 2016 Democratic National Convention, Michelle Obama took the stage. Here she is drawing a connection between her and President Obama's role as parents and their jobs as president and first lady.
We as parents are their most important role models. And let me tell you, Barack and I take that same approach to our jobs as president and first lady because we know that our words and actions matter, not just to our girls, but to children across this country.
And finally, the voice of she who will be first lady in January, Melania Trump, at the Republican convention in July, describing her husband, Donald Trump, as tough, caring, and fair.
Yes, Donald thinks big, which is especially important when considering the presidency of the United States. No room for small thinking. No room for small results. Donald gets things done.
The voices there of first ladies across decades. Catherine Jellison is with us, professor of history at Ohio University. First lady studies, her field. Mary Jordan is with us right now as well from Washington, national correspondent for The Washington Post. She covered Melania and Ivanka Trump during the 2016 election. Mary Jordan, thank you very much for being with us.
Hi, Tom.
What can you tell us about what we know at this point about how Melania Trump intends to handle the job of first lady? And let's just start with residence. Where is she going to live? For how long and what?
Well, it's nothing was conventional about this campaign, about her husband, and it's certainly going to be true with the First Lady. She's going to stay in New York at least for the next semester with her 10-year-old son, Barron. It's also worth noting that Barron will be the first boy in the White House since Jackie Kennedy's son, John John Kennedy.
Long time.
It's been over 50 years. So she's going to stay in New York and says that she wants to keep him in school. She has said to me, she said to many people, that she really doesn't like the public limelight. English is not her first language. She doesn't like public speaking. Louisa Adams was born in London in 1775, John Quincy Adams' wife. And this Melania Trump is the next, it's been almost 200 years since we've had someone who was not born in America. I think she's going to be quite different. She has said in a rare speech that she wants to focus on cyberbullying. And even though it got a lot of guffaws because critics of Trump have said, well, gosh, he's the one who uses the internet to kind of give labels and names.
Her husband.
Mm-hmm. Her husband. But that's a big issue. So if she, whether she's in New York or wherever, if she takes that issue on, she could make her mark in her own way.
Cyberbullying, all the way back in February, maybe a kind of hint toward the fact that she won't live in the White House when she first is First Lady. She was talking with MSNBC host Mika Brzezinski. And here's Melania talking about her campaign experience and why she decided to stay out of the limelight.
Well, it's amazing what's going on. And we're having fun. I like to keep it life as normal as possible for my son, Barron, and I'm a full-time mom, and I love it. So I decided not to be in the campaign so much, but I support my husband 100%.
Catherine Jellison, Professor Jellison, what do you think of this idea of the First Lady not being in the White House? How does that affect the role, and how ahistorical is that?
Yes, this is going to be quite unusual. We were talking about Jackie Kennedy previously and the fact that her big cause as First Lady was historical preservation.
Of the White House and the furniture,
yes,
and everything,
exactly.
Focused right there.
Exactly. Restoring the White House to reflect the history of the people who had lived there and the history of the nation. And really, as you were mentioning, in that White House tour, televised tour, which occurred on Valentine's Day 1962, she brought the White House into Americans' living rooms and said, this is the center of the presidency. And now to have one half of a presidential couple, at least temporarily, not living there, this is something unprecedented. It will be interesting to see how people react to that new reality.
I mean, other presidents coming into office and their spouses had children. I mean, the Clintons, Obama, mm-hmm. Moore, and brought them. They took them out of school and put them in school in Washington. Mary Jordan, how do you read that in Melania Trump? That she or she and President-elect Trump are not willing to do that with their young son, 10 years old, Barron.
Well, first of all, they may just be doing it for the first 6 months or so. He is at a difficult age, and the limelight is excruciating and now way more than it was when Jackie Kennedy was in the White House. I also think that, you know, it's not that far to New York, and you'll see Trump going back to Trump Tower, which he loves. He is a home buddy. When he was on the campaign trail, he would go to enormous lengths not to stay overnight in a hotel. He likes to be at home. I think you're going to see him in New York a lot. And she will, of course, be down for big events. But Ivanka Trump, who is talking about moving to Washington, who has three little kids, will be all over the White House. She is enormously close to her father and has served really as the first lady in many ways. And I think we're going to be seeing enormous amount of his oldest daughter.
Catherine, what about the idea of the First Lady and maybe the president himself not being as much in the White House? Is there precedent for that? I was in New York last weekend, and of course, Trump Tower is right there in the heart of everything on Fifth Avenue, and there's so much police presence there and blockade, stockade kind of around it. I mean, the middle of New York is really tangled up by, between that and his other towers around the corner there along Central Park. It may be familiar for Mr. Trump and Melania Trump, but what about for New York? What about for the country to have the White House not necessarily be the residential anchor of this couple and this First Lady, Catherine?
Yes, this is very unusual. There were people in the White House previously who liked their homes back home. The Trumans, especially Mrs. Truman, loved their house back in Independence, Missouri, and oftentimes went there when she didn't have other official duties in Washington. But as you phrased it there, Tom, the White House was their anchor as the first couple. And I think, as I said, it'll be interesting to see how the American public reacts to this new reality, especially given some of the recent publicity about the cost of providing security at Trump Tower for the first couple, whereas, you know, the White House is already a highly secure building. And this may be something that we will see some backlash from the American taxpayers. I think time will tell how well this sits with the American population.
Marine One, that big helicopter doing a lot of heavy duty between Washington and New York, I guess. Sorry, Mary Jordan.
No, I would just like to add, though, that a lot of the mm-hmm. people that put Donald Trump in office were anti-Washington people.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think they're going to mind. I think New Yorkers mind a lot. I've mm-hmm. talked to a lot of people. The disruption and the cost are big. Some people will be very upset about it. And I wouldn't be surprised if that kind of pressure leads him to actually spend a lot of time at his other house, Mar-a-Lago in Florida, which is much easier and to secure. It's kind of on its own piece of land on a
street.
Water.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think he's new at this game. I mean, many people have said close to him he did not expect to win. Everything is new here. But I don't think. I think the anti-Washington sentiment among his supporters gives him some leeway to live wherever he wants, and the guy has a lot of houses.
Catherine Jellison, I found myself wondering, there's the White House. You go by it in Washington, and it looks quite wonderful. But for Melania, it may be kind of a step down, just in terms of how it's appointed, its layout, its size, its scale, its grandeur. I mean, Trump Tower is sort of gold-plated. Mm-hmm. What about first ladies? Did they all find it a marvelous mansion? Did they find it a drafty old dump? what's the tradition of first ladies coming into the physical structure of the White House?
Well, it depends the kind of background a first lady's coming from. I think all of the first ladies in the modern era have regarded it as a fishbowl, felt that they were too much on public display there, which is one reason why People like Mrs. Obama, Mrs. Kennedy, have gone to great lengths, having young children in the White House, to try to shield the children from publicity, and have guarded their own privacy. And oftentimes, as we see in the movie, Jackie, crafted their own particular public persona that they put on display selectively to try to make that divide between the private and the public first lady. And as I said, that there have been first ladies who preferred their home base, but this is a new situation to have a first lady who says, you know, for the first several months of my husband's presidency, I won't be residing in the White House. The Kennedys, for instance, had several homes, most famously in Hyannisport, where that Theodore White interview took place that you alluded to earlier. And they also had a home in Florida. And they had a retreat there nearby Washington as well. And so this would not be the first couple to have multiple homes. But again, talking about that their primary base may not be the White House, you know, that is quite new. And I think you're right. If one is used to the glamour and the glitz of Trump Tower, maybe the White House doesn't look as inviting. And it certainly would be a setting where one has less control over the extent to which the public is gazing at the first family.
Mildred in Bristol, Rhode Island. Thank you for calling, Mildred. You're on the air.
Hi. I'm 86, and my first lady was Eleanor Roosevelt until I was 15. So she kind of set the model for me. And she was extremely active, and she had to be because her husband was paralyzed. And so she called herself his eyes and ears, and she would go around, and I mean, she went like down to the mines in West Virginia, the coal mines, to inspect, and she would look at housing, and she became kind of his ambassador to America, and in fact, I was watching the Smithsonian Channel these lost tapes of December 7th, 41.
That we just heard an excerpt of here when she spoke to the nation. Pretty amazing.
Right, exactly. She was the first one to speak. And while Franklin was busy trying to plan with his cabinet and his Congress, she was the one, and she was the reassuring voice. And she went to the South Pacific to visit wounded soldiers right out in the middle of the war. And they looked at her as a representative of their mothers, and she had a column called My Day, and in which she expressed her opinions very boldly, and
your memory of it is also vivid, Mildred. At 86, this still comes right back to you.
It's just like yesterday.
I appreciate your call. Our time is short before the break, but Catherine, there's a first lady who had a very strong imprint. Is it the standard, or was Eleanor Roosevelt outside the norm?
Oh, Eleanor Roosevelt was one of a kind. She was the do everything first lady, and that's a first lady who didn't spend a lot of nights at the White House, not because she rejected it as a home base, but because she was out doing all the things that Mildred just alluded to. And I want to point out she was also a very significant leader in the African-American civil rights movement, far ahead of her husband's public pronouncements on that issue. Eleanor was there in her My Day column and in public appearances speaking up about civil rights. So she's sort of in a category all by herself, being first lady during two major crisis periods in American history, the Great Depression and World War II, and the fact that, yes, her husband was paralyzed and she could go places in the 1930s and 1940s that weren't accessible to someone in a wheelchair.
Support for On Point with Tom Ashbrook and the following message comes from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage brings home financing into the 21st century with a completely online process that's fast, easy, and convenient. Using a phone or tablet, you can safely share bank statements and pay stubs without having to dig through piles of paperwork. It takes just a few minutes to get a custom mortgage solution on your terms, wherever and whenever you want. Check out Rocket Mortgage at quickenloans.com/onpoint. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states. NMLSConsumerAccess.org, number 3030.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point, and we're talking this hour about the role of First Lady as Michelle Obama prepares to head out, Melania Trump waits in the wings, and the new film Jackie hits the theaters. You can join us this hour. What do you think of this role and what it ought to be these days? What style, what tone do you think Melania Trump will bring to the White House? Did Michelle Obama get it right? Is Melania staying in Trump Tower a sign of independence, the new woman, or is it not cool? And what about the whole role of First Lady? Is it obsolete? Is it inevitable until there's a first dude and maybe even some way then? Mary Jordan is with us from The Washington Post. Catherine Jellison is here from Ohio University. She studies the role of First Lady. Michelle Obama got very active politically in the failed campaign, ultimately, of Hillary Clinton. But here she was in October, rally in New Hampshire, saying Hillary Clinton was the right person for the job.
We need someone who is a uniting force in this country. We need someone who will heal the wounds that divide us. Someone who truly cares about us and our children. Someone with strength and compassion to lead this country forward.
The political face of Michelle Obama, she was pretty strong out there. Didn't work out for Hillary Clinton, but Michelle Obama, she and Barack Obama are going to continue to live in Washington while their daughter finishes school. Interesting that the Trumps may be in New York or at Mar-a-Lago in Florida, but the Obamas, and this is another break in precedent, still be around in Washington. First Lady Michelle Obama was in a U.S.-Africa Leaders Summit Symposium for First Spouses in 2014, and it was interesting. She shared a stage on a panel with former First Lady Laura Bush in Washington, and she talked about the importance of the work that First Ladies do in their roles, how that work can and should continue after the end of their time in the White House.
We shouldn't be afraid to talk about our legacies, you know, what we want to leave behind in the work that we do. Yes, there are so many important symbolic responsibilities that we have in our roles, but there is nothing wrong with thinking about legacy and what we want to leave for the world.
First ladies can have legacies too, Michelle Obama saying there. And finally, not sure how Melania Trump will focus her attentions if she picks up a sort of public project here, but maybe on this cyberbullying front. She talked about it in an interview with CNN's Anderson Cooper. A little irony here because her husband has been accused of being kind of a cyberbully sometimes, but here she was.
And also I see now in 21st century, the social media, it's very damaging for the children. We need to guide them and teach them about social media because I see a lot of negativity on it, and we need to help them.
First Lady in waiting, Melania Trump right there. Mattia in Omaha, Nebraska. Thank you for calling, Mattia. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I'm just calling to say that I think Melania is rejecting the responsibility of being a first lady, just like the 1% is rejecting the responsibility of the mess they have created. And I think that the 99% is rejecting the whole system. And it's just sad.
Rejecting it because she won't immediately take up residence in the White House, Mattia?
Well, I think that it's a first impression, you know, and I think that I'll bet you anything that she doesn't spend that much time in the White House. That's my feeling on it. I think that she's afraid, and she's not going because she's afraid.
I mean,
not necessarily because, and I think she's using her son as an excuse.
What if Donald Trump's daughter Ivanka is more present there instead? I mean, I'm looking at a new piece here just being reported. Ivanka Trump and her husband Jared Kushner, they are planning to move to Washington. What if Ivanka steps up and becomes more prominent? Would that do for you, Mattia?
No, it's just a representation of a fractured family and a representation of a fractured country. That's what it feels like to me. It just feels, you know, well, in a sense, you know, maybe since it mirrors each other, that somehow it can heal. I don't know. But that's my, I guess, take on it.
We've got it from Omaha. Strong words there, and I appreciate your call, Mattia. One more here. Eastport, Maine. Nichols is calling. Nichols, you're on the air. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Well, I think this is a job, you know, being the First Lady, and it's unpaid. It can be tough work, but it's what you make it, and it can be very rewarding. I was a politician's wife, and I remember being frightened myself that first time I had to go up to someone and introduce myself and say hello, and then what was even harder, ask for money. That was really tough.
Ouch, yeah.
But once I got into it, I found that the people were wonderful and they gave back so much to what you give. And the other thing is, I think that she came to this country and it's welcomed her, and it's time for her to give something back. I think both the Trumps need to live in Washington. They need to live in the White House. It may not be that comfortable for them. It may be a come down to live in such a
the White House. What an idea! A come down.
But well, it's not quite as high, is it?
Yeah.
So, so, but I think it's something they have to do. They have to do for the country. The country's elected them. They're not just him. It's elected them in a way.
Nichols, I appreciate your call as someone with firsthand experience. Mary Jordan, do you expect ultimately Melania may warm up, come around, be?
I do, actually. You know, I mean, when I was talking to her, I asked her how she was like her husband. I said, there's so many differences, obviously. First of all, she's 24 years younger. She's only 46 and he's 70. You know, she has enormous appeal to her unusual story. She grew up in the former Yugoslavia in a concrete block. She leaves college at 19 years old, you know, very different from Michelle Obama, who was a Princeton and Harvard law grad.
Mm-hmm.
She goes, becomes a model. She lands in New York. She meets Donald Trump, this very rich man. She has a great life. They call her the Cinderella back home in what is now Slovenia. I mean, I talked to many people, her grade school friends, and like, wow, what a Cinderella story. You know, and there's enormous appeal in that, but she's a very different person. She does not like politics. And then her husband won. I mean, I think no one's more shocked than this, but I wouldn't be surprised if she kind of grows on the roll. She said that where they are alike is they're both perfectionists. She likes to plan things. She was a runway model where every little detail had to be right. I think she's thrown into this, and it may just take a little time to get used to what she's supposed to do. And she certainly, when she's only given really two public speeches during this long campaign, and she practices and practices. And I think that's why it was so hurtful when she came out at the National Republican Convention and she was charged with plagiarism.
Because from Michelle Obama, no less.
Michelle Obama, who was very interesting that she had said that she looked up to Michelle Obama.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, when that blew back on her, I think it kind of made her go back into her shell a little bit more. She's still shocked at the spotlight. She is this girl from the former Yugoslavia, and she clearly does not like the public spotlight.
I got a tape of her in just last month in Pennsylvania talking about the role of First Lady.
People have asked me, if Donald is the president, what kind of First Lady will you be? It will be my honor and privilege to serve this country. I will be an advocate for women and for children.
And here was Melania Trump talking with Leslie Stahl of 60 Minutes last month, incoming First Lady, describing the kind of role she plays in talking with her husband, President-elect Donald Trump.
He does something that you think crossed a line. Will you tell him?
Yes, I tell him all the time.
All the time?
All the time.
And does he listen?
I think he hears me, but he will do what he wants to do on the end. He's an adult. He knows the consequences. And I give him my opinion, and he could do whatever he likes with it.
Let's go to Elaine in Omaha, Nebraska. Omaha is on this First Lady issue. Elaine, you're on the air.
Thank you so much for in-depth coverage of so many important issues. First of all, I want to say that if you run for the presidency, you expect to be in the limelight. So if she doesn't like it, she should have told him that in the first place and told us all that she doesn't like to be there. But when you are elected, you rise to the occasion, you go and you do your duty. What I want to see in a first lady is, first of all, honesty. Second, some dignified behavior. Third, tackling serious issues. And fourth, being a role model for doing something positive. And I don't see that she's, I mean, I don't know her life very well, but I wonder what she's ever done for anybody else besides herself. And when you start out by plagiarizing your predecessor, I really just don't have much hope for her as a first lady.
I mean, I guess I get it, Elaine, but don't you have a little sympathy? Here she was. She's 24 years younger than Donald Trump. Do you think he would not have run if she said, please don't? She's got her history. I mean, there's a lot of firsts here. First foreign born in 200 years almost. First to pose nude multiple times before she becomes first lady. But now she has.
Well, she certainly liked being in the limelight then and when she was a model on the runway. So I think she needs to grow up and accept that she has some duties and responsibilities to the public, not to be this petulant little child that says, I won't go, and I'm going to stay where I want to be. No.
She might say, I'm a caring mother who wants to keep her son in the school he's familiar with.
Oh, come on. There are no good schools in Washington, D.C.
Okay,
that's ridiculous.
Okay. Tough audience for the first lady in Omaha today. Susan Fields joins us right now from Washington. She's political columnist at the Washington Times. Covered politics and culture since Nancy Reagan was first lady. Susan Fields, thanks very much for being with us.
Hi, Tom. Nice to be here.
It's great to have you. You're sort of fed up with the whole idea of the first lady. You say time to be done with that. Done with what exactly?
I think it's a time that this is a role that has ready to go. And as your debate has even suggested, everyone's trying to impose on something on Melania that no one elected her to do. After all, she was not elected. And First Lady Jackie Kennedy, who you talked about earlier in the show, Jackie Kennedy told her staff not to even call her First Lady because it sounded like the name of a saddle dog. I mean, it really is a reflection of an appendage of pre-feminist of a woman who has to be the sidekick of her husband, and now women have their own careers. Let Melania be Melania. She wants to be a full-time mother on her own terms. She wants to protect her son. She wants to stay in New York. Why should she have to do the bidding of something that she wasn't asked to do originally? She may be Donald Trump's wife, but, you know, there have been hostesses in the White House before. Thomas Jefferson was a widower, and Dolly Madison filled in as the social person to take the limelight for his gatherings with politicians. So I don't know why we hold on to a very anachronistic role for First Lady when we can move on and let women have careers. You know, the Europeans have this. You don't know anything about Mr. Thatcher, do you? You never heard about
him. Not much.
And Mrs. Merkel, I mean, that's the name of her first husband. You don't hear anything about her second husband, who's a quantum chemist. So you wouldn't have him out there on a bully pulpit talking about things that Mrs. Merkel is ahead of. So I think it really is an anachronism that we should pay attention to and rather impose upon her, let her be who she is. Conservative values have been family values, and that's what she wants to do for her son. She wants to exhibit and live her family values by protecting her son. Fair enough.
Catherine Jellison, how about it? I mean, Howard Dean's wife, as I recall, when he was running for president, she made it known that she would go ahead with her medical practice, not necessarily in Washington. Are we prisoners of convention in expectations of Melania Trump here, or is it necessary?
Well, I agree that it is an anachronistic role. Don't get me wrong, but it's apparently one, especially gauging the comments of several of your callers today. It's a role that the American people still have strong opinions about, and they still want played by the female spouse of our president.
What about Ivanka, the president's daughter? If she moves to Washington and becomes prominent, I don't know how she would do that, both with her business. She's supposed to run the Trump empire, I think Donald Trump says. But if she somehow, you know, steps up and becomes like the hostess in the White House or the prominent family partner to the president there, does that work as the precedent for that, Catherine?
Well, I was thinking about Alice Roosevelt, Teddy Roosevelt's daughter from his first marriage, who is probably the best known oldest daughter of a president who was married multiple times, in the case of Teddy Roosevelt, twice. But she sort of outshone her stepmother, who was the first lady, because she was such Alice Roosevelt was such a public rather flamboyant character, known as a fashion plate in her day, considered very, you know, one of the most beautiful young women in the nation. Mm. So we have had in the person of Alice Roosevelt quite a while ago, over 100 years ago, someone, a first daughter who grabbed more of the limelight than the First Lady. Maybe we're in that territory again.
Mary Jordan, the iconography of the First Lady is strong. Do you think, you've covered the Trumps, do you think Donald Trump, Melania, will feel ultimately guided by history, obligated by convention to present the traditional image to the world, or simply won't be guided or feel obligated to that?
It's clear they love breaking the mold. They love that they're doing things differently. They think America wants that now. Donald Trump himself is the most unconventional of candidates. You know, he never even held office. He was a celebrity TV star. I think that there is some room now, even though there are clearly some people that like the traditional role. I think they're going to give her a pass. Let's see what they're going to do. Maybe it could be quite interesting. Maybe Ivanka will rise to the occasion and Melania in time will come around. They'll both have some issues. I just think that the new White House that's coming in January is going to be like nothing we have ever seen, including the First Lady. And remember that Donald Trump has two other ex-wives that are alive.
Oh,
the only other president to ever have been divorced was Ronald Reagan, and he had one. And this family gets together. You know, Marla Maples and Ivana Trump, his first wives are still out there.
Oh, my God. Suzanne Fields, maybe Melania Trump is going to give you what you want. Maybe she will be the one who discards the idea of a first lady.
Well, I mean, she doesn't really have to have a pet project, does she? And, you know, there really hasn't been a firm mold for the First Lady. I mean, you had Margaret Truman who helped her mother because Bess Truman couldn't stand being in Washington. She fled back to Missouri as much as she could. And then Margaret Truman was the social person in the White House for the parties. I mean, I think every woman makes it what she can. I mean, Freud asked, what do women want? Well, maybe we should ask, what does the First Lady want? And even change the name.
Suzanne, we're out of time right there. Suzanne Fields with the Washington Times. It's great to have you. Mary Jordan with the Washington Post. Very generous to be here. And Catherine Jellison at Ohio University. Thanks to you all. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.